You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service.
And welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for January 2002. This is issue number 202, and I'm your host, Fred Vobey, the publisher of the DX Audio Service. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio. That's Lima as in the bean, L-I-M-A, 45805-1835. You can contact me by telephone at my new telephone number, which is 419-228-6223. That's 419-22-VOBBE, V-O-B-B-E. The fax number is still 419-221-1609, and the action line is still 419-224-1609. The best time to reach me is usually in the early evening or on weekends. If you're on the internet, you can send me email at fredv, that's F-R-E-D-V, at nrcdxas.org. And on the web, we're appropriately at www.nrcdxas.org. Now, if you'd like to become a member of the DX Audio Service and you're getting tired of ripping tapes off your friends, and you live in the United States of America, the cost is $28 for a subscription. To members in Canada, the subscription rate is $32, and to Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Those prices are also the renewal rates. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep the cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make a check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned. Yeah, it's a lot cheaper just to borrow tapes, but then you're not a member of the DX Audio Service, are you? Well, we've got a really fully packed edition of the DX Audio Service. We're going to be talking about records, novelty records, amongst other things with a new story from NBC. But right now, Jerry Starr with a look at the AM Switch. Jerry?
Hi, everybody. Jerry Starr with another edition of AM Switch from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News Magazine. We start off 2002 with reference number 521. No call letter changes in 521. One new station was granted on 1570 in Warrenton, Oregon. 50,000 watts day, 1,000 watts night, separate patterns day and night. Several applications of interest on 1050 KTBA, Tuba City, Arizona, would like to move to 760 kHz, and on 1380 KMUS in Muskogee, Oklahoma, would like to change their city of license to Sperry, Oklahoma. And in otherness, on 720 WWDF in Richland, Mississippi, this station is silent, and on 1570 WIZK, Bay Springs, Mississippi, also silent. Moving on to reference 522, where we did have a lot of call letter changes, on 690 KECN, Blackfoot, Idaho becomes KZNR. 970 WINF, Waynesboro, Virginia changing to WKCI. 1000 WDBF, Jupiter, Florida becomes WJBW. 1160 WELX in Callahan, Florida changes to WEWC. And with that new call letter, this station returns from silent status to being back on the air. 1190 KTRA in Dallas, Texas changing calls again, this time to KFXR. 1260 KICN, Idaho Falls, Idaho becomes KZNI. 1280 KDYL, Salt Lake City, Utah changing to KZNS. 1450 KTSP, St. George, Utah becomes KZNU. And on 1470, brand new station in Tremonton, Utah will be KACE. And on 1550 WAXU in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin becomes WZRK. Lake Geneva had been silent. The new call evidently heralds their pending return to the air. A new station was granted in this edition also, and as we mentioned earlier, it already has a call assigned on 1470 in Tremonton, Utah, 10,000 day, 1,000 night, separate directional patterns. And grants to existing facilities, we asked about this last month. The FCC finally got their paperwork together and made it official. 1600 KAKK Walker, Minnesota moves to 1570 kilohertz, where they presently have 1,000 watts in the daytime and 47 watts at night. Also on 1550, WSHN in Fremont, Michigan has gone silent. Moving to reference 523, these call letter changes on 950 KDOW in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, changes to KCCO. 980 CKCK Regina, Saskatchewan becomes CJME for a short time. And on 1680 KYEA in Monroe, Louisiana becomes KRJO. The CKCK-CJME call change will not take place immediately, but will follow a very complicated facility swap and sale that will ultimately end up with CJME's call moving to 980, while the 1300 facility where CJME call resides now will request a move to 94.5. One application for a new station of interest on 1160. New station applied for in Cleveland, Missouri. One application of interest on 580 CKY, Winnipeg, Manitoba. Never thought this station would go anywhere, but they'd like to move to 99.1 FM. And looking in otherness on 620 KZTY in Winchester, Nevada, this new station was actually on the air for a few months, but then went off, and now the license has been canceled and the call deleted. One of the shortest careers of any station we can think of. On 850, CKMA in Abbotsford, British Columbia has gone silent. Their FM is now on the air. 1270, CFSR, Chilliwack, British Columbia also has gone silent and moved permanently to FM, as has CKGO 1240 in Hope, British Columbia. 1260 WNRK Newark, Delaware. We told you last month that this station was silent. Well, they are now back on the air. They have put up a temporary 197-foot long wire antenna held up between two phone poles in the empty lot across the street from where the station used to be. They are presently running 250 watts daytime only. 1490 KTOB Petaluma, California has gone silent, and on 1550 KXEX Fresno, California also reported to be silent. And finally, moving on to reference number 524, these call letter changes. 540 WYLO in Jackson, Wisconsin becomes WRRD. 1280 WWAR, Appomattox, Virginia changing to WOWZ. 1400 WDLL, Fort Payne, Alabama becomes WFPA. 1500 WBFN, Quitman, Alabama becomes WQMS. And on 1570, WRJQ in Appleton, Wisconsin becomes WSCO. One new station granted in this edition on 770. The new station will be in Fort Deposit, Alabama. 450 watts daytime, 300 watts at night, separate patterns day and night. And several otherness items on 870 KAIM in Honolulu, Hawaii. The licensee of this station, Salem Communications, plans to have this station go silent at the end of the year. The programming will move to KGU 760, and we hear that may be a permanent change. 1330 WASN in Camel, Ohio. This station is silent. 1370 KLIS Holdenville, Oklahoma. License canceled and the call deleted at the request of the licensee. And finally on 1570, CKEG has moved to 106.9 FM, and another British Columbia station leaves the AM band for good. And that wraps it up for now. About 30 days from now, we'll have more radio stuff for you. Right now, let's see what kind of stuff is going on in the sunny South. Here's John Bunker.
Well, thanks again, Jerry, and Happy New Year from the land of sugar and warmth. This month, we're going to have some very interesting station breaks to bring you. I look down the list of contributors. I see names like Barry Chenal and Dale Hamm and Mark Durenberger and Mark Strickert, Ed McDonald, son John in there too. So, hey, thanks loads to each and every person who contributes to the Travelog. We're going to be starting the 690 kilohertz frequency today. Now, this channel is listed in the international radio regulations as a Canadian clear channel frequency. That means that any use of this channel by stations outside of Canada must guarantee that no usable signal will cross the border. In fact, the specification is given in microvolts per meter right in the FCC rules. That's a term that requires very sophisticated measuring equipment, by the way. I remember back when I was installing carrier current broadcast stations in the early and middle 1950s, I learned that a signal of 15 microvolts per meter on a good car radio, you could just about make out that the station was on the air. And that was 15. Now you can imagine what 5 microvolts must sound like as you cross that imaginary line into Canada. And that was the original setting by the FCC and the Canadian CRTC.
as far as what stations could put into Canada on those frequencies, 690 being one of the Canadian clears. Now, there are some agreements between the U.S. and Canadian governments that make possible a station at 690 to operate, for instance, in the Detroit, Michigan area. After all, Canada is right at the other end of that bridge across the Detroit River. And we're going to start off today with a station that's only 250 miles from the Canadian border. It's limited to 3,200 watts, and it has to sign off at local sunset or whatever. But we captured it for you one day just so we could begin the year 2002 on the January DX Audio Service Travelogue.
WADS and Sonya Music. It's the great ones.
Good afternoon. It's 60 degrees at 2 p.m. I'm Mark Chudwick with WADS News.
Now wait till you cry. That was only the ID, and of course you're quite right. You know, when I started recording station breaks, and it was just over 50 years ago on an old disc recorder, my intention then was only to keep enough to prove I'd actually heard or recorded each station. And you hear the result from time to time. The amazing thing is that in 25 years, I've not got a better recording of WADS. Well, maybe next summer when we're up that way at the end of May, I'll be able to catch them again. But, you know, unfortunately, the same thing holds for this next ID. There's a major difference. This next station hasn't been on the air in many, many years.
WXUR and WXUR-FM Media.
That's all we have from WXUR. It signed off in 1976. And, you know, for several years, that frequency was left open in eastern Pennsylvania. There were lots of examples of that sort of thing, by the way, in that part of the world. It took a few years for any local signal to appear at 690 in the Philadelphia area after WXUR failed. Here's the sound of the station that finally did come on the 690 airwaves, starting in August 1978.
9 o'clock, and you're listening to WYIS AM 690 in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. I'm Jim Caldwell, and you're listening to the English portion of our Sunday morning broadcast.
That format didn't survive very long because of the complex ethnics of eastern Pennsylvania. This is what it sounds like today, more or less.
This is WPAG, 690 AM, Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
Radio Salvación, tu emisora.
Let's move down the eastern part of the country now for a few hundred miles into the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we'll stop a stone's throw from Tennessee to hear this next 10,000-watt voice of the Smokies.
WZAP, Bristol, Virginia.
What do you want to hear?
Need the Light of Your Love by Paul Overstreet.
All right, where you calling from?
Bristol.
Okay.
Okay. Now, about 50 miles northeast of Richmond, Virginia, in the most rural part of the area, around Chesapeake Bay, lies a little town of Warsaw, Virginia. And they have kind of a bright-sounding station on this frequency.
Man says it's going to be wherever clearness today with a 60% chance of afternoon thunderstorm, high in the low to mid 80s. And this is your Christian voice, WNNT AM, Warsaw, Virginia, broadcasting the good news here of the gospel of our Lord and Savior. In just a moment, we'll be presenting the Bright Spot Hour program by Dr. Harold Seidler.
Okay, we're through fooling around now. We come now to the haven for all who crave easy and inexpensive living. The saving on coats and sweaters is enough to attract many. The shoreline beauty, the history of the state grabs the rest. Perhaps you didn't catch on that we're now in Florida.
We're winning songs and now paying off top up to $500 free.
Okay. Now, 690 down in the northeast part of Florida is a big and important channel. WAPE didn't last all that long, and its replacement didn't fare a heck of a lot better.
From Myrtle Beach to Cape Canaveral, the station you grew up with, the mighty 690.
WPBQ, Jacksonville.
You know, it looks to me like that of all the serious listening that's done to AM radio in the Jacksonville area and about 11 counties around that, WOKV has to be the station of choice.
What is your preferred implement of destruction?
Bare hand.
Oh, a real man, ladies and gentlemen.
Morning Show University, weekdays 6 till 9 on News Talk 690, WOKV.
You know, WOKV has just applied for an increase in power that would take them to 50,000 watts both day and night if it's approved. And so, listeners across the fruited plain, if I don't get sued for saying that, while we only got about 25 miles into the Sunshine State, we have to leave already. We're going to head up into the middle of Alabama.
A pleasant good night from Joe Davis Stadium in Huntsville.
I'm Dale Jarrett, and you're listening to AM 690 WBOK Birmingham.
Good time rock from the 50s, 60s, and 70s on AM 690 WBOK Birmingham.
You know, WVOK was a long service and long trusted call sign, so of course that meant it had to be changed when the new people came into control. I guess I can understand a big station going to all sports programs these days, but I do have trouble with the call letters of WJOX, meaning jocks, and tying that directly in with sports doesn't fit to me.
Joe from Birmingham, we'll be back right after the news on WJOX. We don't have news.
I can't get news, you know, the FM is...
We'll keep it right here. Who cares? Who cares?
Just, let me see, give me an ID here.
I'll do an ID. You don't even need one.
Go ahead, verbally.
You're listening to WJOX. You do the ID. Get that mic. You know how to do it? You still remember, don't you?
Sure.
WJOX Birmingham.
AM 690 in Birmingham.
Go ahead. Of course. This is WJOX AM 690 Birmingham.
There you go, one of our listeners.
We're covered legally, man.
Oh, yeah. 942-6900, 1-800-239-WJOX.
Okay, so JOX it is. Now, if you'll haul out a map of West Virginia, you'll find the town of Fisher. Now, wife Linda and I set out in the early 1990s across the panhandle of Maryland. Actually, we were on our way to the Bridgeport Convention back in those days. And one evening on the way out there from New Jersey, where we were then living, we stopped in the town of Cumberland. And my reason was to park the motorhome there and drive the tow car south for about an hour into Fisher, West Virginia. And I did just that. But the radio station in Fisher was on a special program that night, and after waiting an hour and a half, I gave up trying to catch an ID on tape and headed back toward Cumberland. And of course, just as we started to hit the city streets and the buzzing and the noise of Cumberland, a noisy WELD gave a fine full station break, and I was miserable. But then, out of the clear blue, a year or so later, Ed McDonald sent me this recording of WELD. And I'm most grateful, Ed.
Community news is heard here on Community Radio, WELD Fisher, West Virginia, WELD FM Petersburg, studios for both in downtown Fisher. Good morning, it's 9:01 a.m. Let's take a look at the menus at the nutrition centers and see what's cooking today.
Okay. Now, here next is the station I mentioned at the top of today's program segment, WNZK. It's only a few miles from the Canadian border, and yet the Canadian authorities allowed the U.S. to build a station there. WNZK first signed on as a daytime-only station at 690 on the dial.
WNZK, Ethnic Radio 69, Westland.
And then later, after finding it possible for a nighttime-only station to be operated from the Detroit market at 680 on the dial, it applied to the FCC for a channel switch at local sunrise and local sunset.
America's ethnic superstation. You're listening to WNZK, Dearborn Heights, Detroit. 690 days, 680 nights.
And we've heard that for the last couple of months, so we'll let it go with that. Hey, you remember way back when the Canadian station in Leamington, Ontario was doing that same sort of thing? Well, that was, what, just up until a couple of years ago, in fact. Well, let's go west with our dials still glued to 690 and see what's up in the town that hosts the Experimental Aircraft Association.
More excellent oldies on WXOL, Oshkosh, Fox Cities, X69.
Okay, that's enough to tell us what that station does, I guess. And our last stop today takes us just over the Wisconsin border into Minnesota for the Twin Cities.
Edie Brickell from Picture Perfect Morning on KTCZ, KTCJ, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the city's 97, for 10 years, true to the music.
We were listening for KTCJ there, by the way. And to update that station quickly,
All Sports 690.
All Sports 690.
The Score.
KFXN, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
The Score.
Mark Kestisher, the Chicago Cubs lead the National League Central.
Okay, that's going to do it for the travelogue this month. We're going to finish up 690 next time we're together, and they'll all be west of the Mississippi, except the ones in New Orleans and Montreal. 21 stations we'll hear next month. Now, if you'd like to get in touch with me, Doc Morgan is coming up with the address information, and I'll see you next month.
To contribute to the travelogue, send your top-of-the-hour IDs to John Bowker, 1811 Fort Duquesne Drive, Sun City Center, Florida, 33573. Remember to start recording a minute before and after each top-of-the-hour ID, and make sure you have the legal ID in the recording.
Hello, DXers. I'm Bruce Conti, and this is the DX Digest, coming to you from Capahaden, Newfoundland, Canada, site of the DXpedition honoring the centennial celebration of Marconi's historic first-ever transatlantic reception. As we hear from the DXers, I'll share with you some of the outstanding signals received. Here now, the 2001 Newfoundland DXpedition.
Mark Connolly, Billerica, Massachusetts. You go back to 1901. There was Guglielmo Marconi, who got the first transatlantic communication going. He was the first DXer. He set up a transmitting station in Poltoo, Cornwall, England, and managed to go to St. John's, Newfoundland, and was able to receive DIT-DIT-DIT, or S. So that's how it all started, if you really want to go back to the beginning. But as far as the Newfoundland DXpeditions, 1991 was the 90th anniversary of Marconi, so Jean Brunel, Neil Kazaras, and I got together and planned it out, and we looked at some possible venues, and this Lawless Hospitality Home down here in Capahaden became the place to go. And we've been having these almost every year since then. This is the 10th of these.
On 918 kilohertz, this is Radio Intercontinental, Madrid, Spain.
Aquí, Radio Intercontinental, Madrid. Señoras y señores, a partir de este momento, la revista radiofónica Caliente y Frío. Caliente y Frío.
Now on 1440 kilohertz, RTL Luxembourg.
Jean Brunel, St. John's, Newfoundland. The idea was Mark's. Mark phoned me one day and says, where would be a good place to DX? And I said, I'll tell you on one condition. The condition is that I can come. So that's how I got involved with this thing.
I got roped into it. And Neil Kazaras was involved in this planning process also.
This place, this particular place that we're in, came through my scoping it out driving around with a map, I found that this particular location seemed to have a fair amount of real estate that led towards the south, and also a beachfront that we could run wires along towards Europe. At one time, this was a guest home, and I think Mark had noticed it in some tourist brochure.
Yes.
And it was interesting when I got here that it didn't exist, but I banged on doors until I found it and convinced them that maybe we could use the premises. We've been coming here ever since.
This is Mega Radio from Germany on 1431 kilohertz.
I didn't know what to do for crazy. I seen this one on the news a couple weeks ago that made me sick. Some dude was drunk and drove his car over a bridge and had his girlfriend in the trunk. She was pregnant with his kid, and in the car they found a safe, but it didn't say who it was to. Come to think about it, his name was Jew. Damn.
Mega Radio. Deine Musik. Auf deine Musik.
Now on 1190 kilohertz, this is Radio America, Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Una realización de Marcelo Arce. Desde Buenos Aires, capital de la República Argentina. Radio América. Radio América.
On 1368 kilohertz, Manx Radio, England.
Broadcasting from Douglas in the Isle of Man, this is Manx Radio. Talk Radio Vatican.
Jim Renfrew, Byron, New York. This morning I heard at 0730 UTC, the Navy station in Keflavik, Iceland. By that time, all the European powerhouses had faded out, and it was standing all alone. And then around 0910, I managed to catch a signal from Bolivia. That's the first one I've heard from there. And I've tried every year I've been here to get something from there, so I was very happy to come up with that station.
Here's Jim's reception of Keflavik, Iceland on 1530 kilohertz. From Slovenia on 1170 kilohertz, this is Radio Capodistria. Now, classic rock from the Netherlands, Arrow on 828 kilohertz.
Fisher, Calgary, Alberta. Well, this is, I think, the fourth or fifth time that I've been here since about 95 or 96. I think this one probably compares closest to the first one I was here. On that year, I think we heard something like 130 countries. And the last couple of years, while they've been interesting and always hearing something new. I don't think they quite compared with that first time. I think this year we've been getting good openings to most parts of the world, maybe save Southern Africa.
The Voice of America on 1530 kilohertz from Sao Tome, West Africa.
We're now going off 1155 and 4950 kilohertz shortwave. Africa World Tonight continues on 17895, 17445, 15580, 15445, 15410, 11975, 7415, 7375, and 6035. The following frequencies also continue to be available for listeners in the Wave Band. 1530 for listeners in West Africa, and 909 for listeners in Southern Africa. This is Africa World Tonight from the Africa Service of the Voice of America.
Here's one of the locals, VOWR, Newfoundland, on 800 kilohertz.
Well, we're certainly winding down on our Music for Dreams program here on VOWR, and we hope to be able to squeeze in the selection by Jim Reeves.
County Sound Radio from England on 1566 kilohertz.
You crack it before then. Have a go, won't you? Also, the news quiz. Great prizes to be won. Three questions from the news. Get them right and be a winner. We've got the best music. We're first in news and travel. It's the Bigger, Brighter Breakfast Show. It's this Friday between 6 and 11 with me, Ron Brown, on County Sound Radio.
About 1 kilometer antenna that's pointed at eastern part of Brazil. We have one that may be 300 meters towards Europe. We've got a much shorter one that we call the Africa wire, which is a bit of a zigzag shorter wire in that general direction, maybe 150 to 200 meters. We have a K9AY loop just outside the shack. We have a 1 kilometer beverage now pointed at Africa.
This is United Christian Broadcasters Ireland, identifying as UCB Europe on 549 kilohertz. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty from Armenia on 864 kilohertz with the RFERL internet address over Radio France Bleu.
Bundan bir yon havagi uzatılabilen sonraki iki dersimiz radyomuzun internet sayfasında muntazam saklanıp borladı. Azadlık Radyosu internet sayfası adresi www.rferl.org. Kaytaramız www.rferl.org.
From England, this is Magic 1161. Radio Romania, signing on 1152 kilohertz. With the interval signal. The 2001 Newfoundland D-Expedition, celebrating the Marconi milestone in 1901. More next time on the DX Digest. I'm Bruce Conti, 73, and good DX.
If you don't get it, you must be living in one of the no's. This is the DX Audio Service.
This is Mark Dernberger on the road to Dannebrog, Nebraska, the home of CBS Sunday Morning's Roger Welch. And until recently, also the home of John McKinney. For a number of years, the engineer in charge of the FCC's Grand Island, Nebraska monitoring station. We visited John last September. At the time, he was a picture of health at 83, and we were shocked to learn of his death just a few weeks after our conversation. This is part one of a two-part interview with Mr. McKinney, in which he talks about the FCC Grand Island, Nebraska monitoring station. I don't know if you remember this or not, but you did a slideshow for the National Radio Club back 25 years ago in Lincoln.
I can't remember what it was about and what I did or anything about it.
The people who were hearing this tape actually were at that convention.
You're going to be reconnecting with a lot of old friends. This is a group of broadcast listeners and so
That's correct, forth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This might be a good time to start talking about the monitoring station, which was built about 1929, I think, wasn't it?
Monitoring station was built in 1929. Along in the late 20s, we had field offices around, Detroit, Chicago, New York, and so forth. St. Paul. They were very concerned about broadcast stations. How do you... You need a special set of apparatus in order to make measurements on broadcast stations in order to see if they stay on frequency and meet certain requirements and then conduct themselves the way they are.
When we say broadcast, we're talking medium wave AM at that time.
Medium wave broadcast.
There was no FM.
No, we're talking that which is between 550 and 1500 kilocycles at that time.
I love the fact that you said kilocycles too.
Yeah, it's kilocycles. Should have stayed that way. Anyway, the Federal Radio Commission decided they needed a monitoring station, and they decided that if all things being equal, if they could get good reception and so forth, they should be somewhere near the middle of the United States, because they were talking about a monitoring station. And they figured with good beverage antennas and so forth that they could at some time, be able to monitor the bulk of the United States stations from that point. They wanted to find out if they could. They had some inspection cars, Black Mariahs they were called later. They were Studebakers that were built with a wood body. They were like a hearse almost. And they had equipment in the back, and even the cab was of wood. And they used loop antennas on them. And a big battery supply on the thing, because everything was battery operated in those days. Everything was completely battery operated. They had receivers in the back, and they were manned by two men. One of them made passes all through the Midwest here, and they checked ground conductivity. They did all sorts of things and listened to signals and what have you. And they decided that Grand Island, Nebraska was the place to put the monitoring station. So it was the monitoring station. So work went ahead, and by 1929, they had purchased or were given, I think they were given, a piece of land in a particular location. I want to say it's either 40 or 60 acres to begin with, but it expanded after that. Of course, in the World War II and all, we got more acreage, got more antennas and so forth. But that's when it started, 1929. The first notice of violation was sent out in 1931. By the time they got the station manned and so forth. And the station was absolutely complete in itself. They generated their own power, and most of the equipment, like I say, even the equipment, like I say, the mobile equipment was all battery. Well, so was the, we had huge banks of batteries in the monitoring station, 120-volt banks of batteries, So the lighting and everything in the station was off of these 120-volt big banks of batteries. And there was a big battery room in the back annex to the station. They had a diesel engineer on the payroll. They charged the batteries in the daytime. They did a minimum of night work at the time. I mean, mostly it was a daytime type of occupation. But at certain nights, men would be out there maybe to midnight or after midnight and do some monitoring and all to check on what's going on at that time of day. When I first went out there in 1941, that battery room was still there with all the batteries in it, but they was not being used. Everything had gone. AC power had been brought into the location not long after the station was built. So they went on over to AC power. I'd say maybe they operated a year on batteries or somewhat, and then they went over. And then battery or AC-operated receiving sets were coming in about 1928, 29, you know, in through there. So we got away from the battery concept. And when they brought the power in, the power came in. The closest power takeoff was a half a mile from the station, and it came underground there into the station. And so the only wire that came into the station when the station was built was a telephone line. When the war started, before the war started, the reason I was hired out there, in 1939 when the war began in Europe, we became concerned about radio traffic and so forth and spies and this sort of thing. So they started to hire extra people at the monitoring stations. They established what was called the NDO, the National Defense Operation. But as soon as war was declared, they changed it over to the Radio Intelligence Division, RID. We were the same people. But by then we hired quite a few of us hams and what have you. By this time they started to build monitoring stations other places. Well, they ended up with around 13 primary monitoring stations.
Across the country.
Across the country, including one in Honolulu, near Honolulu, and one in Alaska, near Anchorage. We had a station in Puerto Rico, and we had these primary stations, and now Grand Island being a primary station, we had a lot of secondary stations coming out. We had one in Sturgis, South Dakota, another one in Omaha. And these were just a rented room with a man with a receiver and so forth.
And a loop antenna?
Right, loop antenna or what have you.
Okay.
But they didn't have the communication facilities that we had or the equipment to work with. But they were on these spots, so we could get a hold of them if we had something in that area. They were close by to go out and investigate it. A lot of them had a car with a loop antenna on it, too.
Right.
I took a little time off of monitoring and went out and helped put some loops in the top of some Studebakers there when I was at Grand Island. Yeah.
Really? So if a casual... Someone like me who was interested in DXing, if I had driven by that plant, what would I have seen at that station? What was in the backyard?
In the backyard? Well, we had we would have had two direction finders out there, Adcock-type direction finders, well away from the building, well away from everything, and nothing more near them for a while.
Can you explain for the non-technical people what an Adcock is?
Adcock is a... The old Adcock, the first Adcock they used during World War II was a small house on stilts that you reached the inside of the house by going up a ladder underneath the center of the house and through a trap door, which after you got in there you closed, became part of the floor. And in there you had a bench about the size of a desk that you sat before on a stool. And coming down into that direct center of that desk space, there was a wheel that rotated a pipe that went on up through the peak of the roof of this little shack that you have. Not too far above the roof, there was a boom extending, maybe 12 or 15 feet.
Horizontal.
Horizontal boom, extended 12 to 15 feet either side, with the dipoles. Vertical dipoles on the ends of this boom. So they had twin feed lines from those dipoles come in and were phased out and dropped down through the pipe and into a Hammerland SX-28 receiver that we used there. which was battery operated. We had no power out there because to put any lines, any wires out there whatsoever, we felt would distort our bearings. Later we found out we could bury them deep enough and we could get by with all this, but that was the original Adcock.
But it was a direction finder.
It was a direction finder, that's what it was, Adcock direction finder, right. They're medium frequencies.
So you had two Adcocks.
We had two Adcocks, right.
What else did you have back there?
Well, across the road we had 80 acres of rhombic antennas. Now, I'll tell you about the rhombic. It was a semicircle of rhombic antennas spaced 20 degrees apart. So we had one 10 degrees, 30 degrees, 70 degrees, 90 degrees, and so forth through a semicircle, which were double-ended. You could terminate them either way. So it'd give you a full circle of rhombic antennas 20 degrees apart. All right, now, for the beverage antennas, where they were there since almost the beginning of time when it was put in, there were five beverage antennas that were put in. These were put in, they're some of the earliest ones that were put in because they were interested in broadcast and they wanted the low-frequency wave antenna for that purpose. And, of course, they wanted as much gain as they could get. The longest one we had was 1,800 feet long, and you wouldn't even recognize it. Because it ran down over the barbed wire fence. The road to the monitoring station runs north and south. So this was the north-south beverage. And it ran, and the station sat in the middle of the mile, half a mile from either other road. The only thing you could notice on this was that everybody wondered, why did they put all the insulators every few feet in that barbed wire fence down below? And the beverage was I'd say those fence posts were higher than normal fence posts. They were about 12 foot high, but they actually had the fence at the bottom. They had that on the top.
So there was a beverage of about 1,800 feet.
1,800 feet. That was good.
North south.
Dual terminated, so it was either north or south. There was another beverage going out through the backfield that we called the Atlanta one. It was kind of focused on Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't remember the exact, in other words, it was southeast. And there was another one that was due east, 90 degrees. It was great, you know, if you wanted to get Washington, D.C. or Denver. Or San Francisco, right? East and west. And there was another that was pointed at Chicago, somewhere around 70 degrees. There was another one that was, probably pointed more at Minneapolis, I would say. I can't remember, in that general area.
Northeast, yeah. Slightly.
Yeah, okay. Which the backside of that would have given you Arizona or New Mexico, see what I mean?
The graveyard stations, at the time, were all 250 watts day and night. And there were hundreds of them on the air at that time, I think, weren't there? Those five local channels?
Yeah.
Were you able to copy those off
beverage? Copy some of them.
Did you have to phase two beverages copy them?
No, you'd be surprised what you could copy. The main thing was how much interference you're getting from someone else in the same general direction. This is where the problem. Yeah, I want to give you an example, something that I did one time. I was monitoring, and I was looking over the broadcast band to find out if I could find anybody off frequency, and I get a warble on KOA's frequency, KOA Denver. Where is it, 800 and something?
850.
850. Yeah. I was just on a general antenna, I think. I hear this, boom, 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 boom. Hey, somebody's off frequency. Either he is or someone else. Something is beating against something else. So I switch over to the beverage, double-ended beverage. I've got KOA just pouring in. I switch the thing to the other side. He drops down to a level that I can read and identify, but not too clear. A little station over in Iowa, or maybe it was the other side of Iowa or something, sharing that frequency. It was daytime. And I measured him, and he was out of tolerance. We only allowed 20 cycles, 20 hertz, I call it. And I don't know, he was 25 or 30, so he's going to get a citation for that. But I was able to identify the station and all. This shows you the front-to-back ratio that you could get with something. I mean, you got 50 kilowatts pouring at you from there, and about the same distance or so away, we got this little, maybe it was a 1 kW station or something. Most of my work with the commission, we were not really interested too much in what the broadcasters were doing. We did it incidentally. I mean, we were more interested in what Russia was doing or what Germany was doing, depending on what time period we're looking at. You know what I mean? So we were spending more time with
shortwave, right,
than we were on the others. But we did. We covered the broadcast, Ben. And
the beverages were probably your workhorses, weren't they?
The beverages for a medium wave band were our workhorses, right. Yeah. Oh, we had a few wire antennas. I mean, 60 feet high, you know, simple wire antennas, yes.
For the easy stuff.
Yeah.
Did you have any big loops, big direction-finding loops?
No. There were loops in right in the main building themselves when the station was put up. There are old pictures of Colster radios or RCA cabinet radios, like you, if you were a millionaire at that time, it might be in your living room, I mean, in a mahogany cabinet, right. You know. They had a couple of nice big ones there, and with a loop on top of them. Now, how much work they did with those, I don't know. That was before my time. I'm talking, you know, that was early 30s sometime, sure. late 20s, yeah.
Wow, think of the fun DXing from a nice warm building with all those beverages, remote controlled termination, long wires all at your disposal at the flick of a switch. Next month, we'll conclude our visit with John McKinney, discussing the staffing at the station and some of the monitoring station's assignments. This is Mark Dernberger. We take mail at 667 Long Rifle Road, Grand Junction, Colorado, 81503. And email can be sent to mark@dernberger.com. That's D-U-R-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R. Happy New Year from all of us on the DX Audio Service. And good listening, DXers.
At this time, please turn over your tape to side two.
Every day you can hear it, that great holiday spirit from yours truly, 890 WLS in Chicago.